But the Rob Hay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going, and we have a quorum, and we'll take up. Let's take up 93 first. Somebody from, I guess we have two people from the Department of Administration. You might just want to both sit up there. Or is it just one or two? Okay. Good. And you could introduce yourself and the department for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dick Winchell, and I'm the Deputy Director of General Services and Supply. And this is Mrs. Maria Iverson, who is our Assistant Leasing and Facilities Manager.
Mr. Wilson, Winchell, and Ms. Iverson, the purpose of that we'd like you to talk about is, you have copies of the bill?
Yes, we do.
Is Section 37, dealing with leases. Can you give us a little background on how this has been administered in the past sort of a track record, past performance, and then whether you see any reason for changing it, and for excising out the language in the brackets.
No, not particularly. We've had a very short time to review it, and at this point we don't see. Any specific problem with it at all. The changes, particularly the housekeeping measure, noted on page 5, which does remove the $12,000 stipulation, which in our estimation is an excellent piece of work, and quite possibly should have been, or probably should have been done considerable time ago. As pertains to the 25 and 40 year stipulation, we see no immediate problem with it, but there is the fact that the 40 year stipulation was and could be at some future time fairly beneficial, but under the circumstances it doesn't pose any form of immediate problem to our function.
Okay, Mr. Winchell, we have some questions first to Representative Kelly.
I'm sorry, Mr. Winchell, I missed something here. You said something was a good piece of work that should have been done long ago. What were you referring to?
The housekeeping measure here, removing the $12,000 stipulation on page 5.
I'd sure like to know why that's a good piece of work.
Removing the $12,000 stipulation.
I'm of the opinion I'd like to know what's going on. And by keeping that in the books, I think I'll know what's going on, at least a little more, readily perhaps.
Well, to be perfectly frank with you, that's $1,000 a month lease. Anything in excess of $1,000 a month. And we have considerable leases that exceed $1,000 a month. And I think that it would be probably a personal estimate on the situation would be, to the legislature's detriment if they had to pass, and certainly to the executive branch's detriment if we had to wait for the legislature to convene in order to enter into a lease agreement which exceeded $12,000 per year. We do this quite frequently, and we have over the years. We do have an Attorney General's opinion that was issued in 1965. To the then Commissioner Gurton of Administration, which permitted or indicated to the department that it was not legislative intent that they literally review all leases which exceeded $12,000 per year. Apparently, the original verbiage, as it was placed in there, was primarily in conjunction with the establishment of ASHA as a prime building contractor for the lessor to the state of Alaska.
Representative Miles and Dankworth.
Do you
certainly can.
Do you presently provide this
review for the legislature? Does the Division of Leasing provide copies of all lease contracts that exceed $12,000 to the legislature on an annual basis?
We provide a lease ledger, which incorporates all ASHA leases as well as all commercial leases, to legislative audits. And we provide any documentation. In fact, we've just had a request that legislative finance be furnished the material also.
What is a lease ledger?
Basically, all it is just a compilation of all the leases that the executive branch enters into. And it's we compile it twice annually. It's an updating.
Does the legislature? There are a number of freshman members of the committee, including myself, and we don't really know the pattern. Does the legislature take action on it then? Does the is there one giant concurrent resolution which approves those or disapproves, or does the Budget and Audit Committee take action on those?
That's done through the budgeting process per se. If the legislature approves a budget for an agency wherein they're indicating that they require so much for lease to lease a building or a proportionate share of a building, that's considered prima facie acceptance of the request by the agency.
I realize that in each budget is a rental factor which breaks down into the lease, but there is no concurrent resolution that is annually passed on.
Not specifically for the leases, no. Now I might just clarify that and add that they do when it pertains to ASHA facilities. The bond package is passed and so forth.
That doesn't have anything to do with the leasing, though.
Well, yes, because we literally do lease the facility from ASHA. And really, in essence, that's pretty much what we're discussing here. Really, this whole thing apparently perpetuated as a result of the state's involvement with ASHA and the lease back conditions.
So there is a concurrent resolution with regard to ASHA leases?
You're correct.
Okay. Thank you,
sir. Yes.
Mr. Danford.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Miles covered my question. Yesterday I had a question in just reading this and not referring back to the 65 opinion. It would almost lead one to think that possibly that the way that they have gone about presenting these to the legislature in the past would indicate that possibly some of our leases are not even valid had they not followed this procedure. But apparently you've been relying on the 65 decision in the interpretation.
That's correct, sir.
Do you think that there's any should there be any limit at all? I realize $12,000 is not a realistic figure in my judgment now, but or do you think it's well enough taken care of without that?
We literally have pretty substantial controls on the leasing activity, and since I established the office myself some 4 or 5 years ago, I'm fairly familiar with it, and we do have very good controls. The money does have to be allocated by the legislature to the respective agencies who do pay the fees, the lease cost, and we keep a fairly close eye on all agencies, all their requests, and so forth. So I personally do not feel that it would be necessary for the legislature to put any formal limitation on it.
In fact, by the time we get around to looking at it, it's already gone anyway, isn't it?
That's correct.
I mean, you've already gone through your bid procedures.
That's correct.
And found out if the agency has the money, and it shows up in their budget.
That's correct.
Sure.
What's the date on that opinion?
December 13, 1965.
So that, before this provision ever took effect, the Attorney General came out with that decision.
In my opinion, these results were not intended by the
I'm sure it's probably administratively the correct decision, because I can see where that'd be a just turn into a real nightmare having to submit every contract to the legislature. But I can't imagine how legally you could ever pretend that was an opinion that says that doesn't really mean what it says.
It perhaps would be beneficial for yourself, Representative McKinnon. You did look at this. It Apparently, the opinion was issued as primarily as a result of some work that was being initiated on behalf of the Alaska Housing Authority. And it might, to answer your question specifically, you might just want to read that that section there.
Just for clarification, do you have any idea why they ever said 40 years?
I really don't.
We're trying to figure out.
It says in order to finance. In the opinion, it says 25 to 40 years in order to finance. Mr. Mitchell, I have another question. Now, how does the legislature, if I want to know what we're paying for a building in Anchorage, how do I find out?
This lease ledger that we send over to legislative audit and to legislative finance now, or we can provide you with a copy of it, lists every lease that the state has and the square foot cost, the monthly cost of the facility, what is included in it, heat, electricity, lights, water, who the lessor is, the period of time for the lease, the entire gamut. We provide those to various, the governor's office and any other agency that requests it.
Mrs. Iverson, I'd like to get one. I've run into some problems in Anchorage. I don't know, they might not be problems, but I'd like to take a look at some of our bidding policies.
Any further questions from the committee? Mr. Miles? Let's have a 2-minute recess.
Oh, we're on recess. I've been wanting to save me a trip out there, but I don't tell them that that's a lot of people. If somebody's not happy with the lease, you know, the way the bids came out, is there one oversight? Is there that, or is there anyone, if they say there was a violation of the bid procedure? What's their course of action other than just going to
get? Well, primarily that's, they can come to us, they can go to, of course, to the ombudsman, they can go to the commissioner of administration, and I do recall an instance, Tom Main, as a matter of fact, mentioned a situation that you became involved in. That's great. Well, we really don't dare anymore, you know, and we didn't make the attempt anyway. The competitive bid laws are very well established, and we have to adhere to them, and we do. And we make mistakes, or, you know, there's no question about it.
I just wanted to back in his case, he just completely thought that there was a violation there. What recourse does he have other than this?
We hear all, if we did comply to the letter of the law, then, we will advise him that we won't hear the case, but then he can take it to the ombudsman,
That's okay. Okay, we'll come back to order. And it's feeling the chair that it'd be prudent to amend section 10 out, and just for the time being. And I'm going to appoint Representative Miles, the Committee of One, to ask for an updated Attorney General's opinion of the statute and how he interprets it now, and have Representative Miles report back to us. And everything being equal, then state affairs will just plug in a piece of remedial legislation, you know, encompassing, just including Section 10. And possibly this will bring something to light and act in a prudent fashion so that it doesn't appear on the floor that there's a cloud over this, that we don't have all the explanations.
Mr. Chairman, what exactly do you mean for the time being? We'll take this out for...
So we'll take it out of this bill. It'll be out of this bill. And then when Miles reports back to us with an updated Attorney General's opinion, and an explanation on the background, some further clarification and stuff, some of the stuff you're interested in, you know, perusing the ledgers and this sort of stuff. Why then we'll just plug in a bill from State Affairs, you know, be the office ship, or we can let Miles author it or anybody else, but you know.
I suggest what might be a simpler method of just offering a committee amendment to delete that section, and then if by the time the bill gets to the floor we decide the section should stay in, we just withdraw the amendment.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Save the expense of printing up the committee substitute.
Okay. But then there'd have to be a...
we pass this bill and then it's deleted, and that's the purpose, right? And this bill gets passed out and then it's deleted. Why did you say we're not going to be substituted?
No, I believe it's out of here. Well, what Bob's talking about is deleting Section 10 from the bill.
Yeah, just so...
Well, just instead of deleting Section 10 and coming in with a committee substitute, just offer an amendment, attach a committee amendment deleting Section 10. When it gets to the floor, if we still want Section 10 deleted, we can go ahead and delete it as an amendment. And if we decide to keep Section 10, we just withdraw the committee amendment.
Just a procedural thing. It saves
Printing up.
Yeah, that's fine. That's probably even better because it goes to finance here, and by the time they take it up, that might be 10 days, and by that time, maybe everything's fine. So, yeah, we'll take the... Does everybody understand the motion, Representative McKinnon?
Tim, does that sound, you know...
Yeah.
At least, okay. Because I'm in the dark table.
Okay, we'll adopt that amendment. And is there a motion to pass the bill out?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Motion's been made. Unanimous consent asked for. Any discussion? None? Okay. Bill will move out, and we'll attach that committee amendment.
Thanks for coming,
Will. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And all the information...
Appreciate it. I like the AG and the very happy to there. Nothing illegal, but we made a move. We did.
I think you, Mr. Winchell, I think you guys know what we're interested in. We just want sort of a documented past performance in writing of how this is how it's been handled in the past. You could send that to Representative Miles and Kelly, both of them.
It's kind of important to note here that we're talking about two different procedural aspects. One is the recent commercial properties.
I'm sorry, there are many reasonable building, laws.
And the other is the ash facilities. This whole thing originated as a result of,
If you could try to explain that so then we can understand it. Why don't you make a copy just to the committee and send a copy of the data to Miles and Kelly.
Very good.
Okay, and that way if any of the other members, they can get it from the committee.
Fine.
Okay.
Thank you again for coming.
Thanks. We'll take up House Bill 80 now, an act relating to Alaska Native Arts and Crafts, bill by the governor. And you guys can probably just both sit up there if you'd like. You'd state your name and rank and serial number for the record.
I'm Dick Engen with the Division of State Libraries and Museums.
I'm Jim Diggin, Division of Economic Enterprise and Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
Mr. Engen, if you could just paraphrase the bill, its intent and impact, and if you have a fiscal impact on it.
I do have a fiscal. I would apologize. I think there's a typo in it. We were typing it from 12:30 to 12:45, but if committee would like copies of the fiscal note. Oh, those totals are so small, they're ridiculous.
Okay, now, right? Now you made everybody suspect.
Basically, the reason for the legislation is to change existing law. The original law was passed in 1960, and since then, no competitions on the Native Arts and Crafts have been held. It came up for discussion last year and remained in the Senate. The feeling was if we are going to have it on the books, we should be doing something with it. And since the State Museum is involved in, you know, Alaska Positive, a photographic exhibit, and other types of exhibits, it would be more realistic for the State Museum to be the one involved in holding, sponsoring such a competition. So in a sense, what it does is it moves Alaska Native Arts and Crafts competition from Department of Commerce, Economic Development, to the Division of State Libraries and Museums, to the State Museum for holding the competition. Originally, it was, as the bill was written, it provided for four regional competitions, and as we investigated it last year, it just seemed that that was going to cost quite a bit of money, as well as being relatively awkward to try to handle in the four regions. And what we were trying to do was recognize the outstanding examples of the arts and crafts. So therefore, having a single competition, that the competition itself, then, that is those items selected for display, could be traveled to other regions of the state so that the best of any of them would be seen in all sections of the state, was a more viable approach for us to attempt on it. Further, in investigating with the Anchorage Museum of Fine Art, History and Fine Arts, they have an annual Alaska Native Arts and Crafts Festival, I believe it is called, and they were quite willing for us to, in effect, work with them, or them to work with us, so that they would still hold the competition, have the schedule, so that part of the cost of gathering and mailing back and so on would still be theirs, because it would be in Anchorage, but that the state's involvement then would be the responsibility for the packing, the crating of the exhibits to be shipped to other sections of the state, and a share in the cost of the juror, or jurors, as the case would be, in judging it. And if you have any questions, I'll sure be happy to try to answer them.
Jim, did you have a presentation?
No, I didn't. I just concur with what Dick said, and we think that it should go to their department.
Mr. Dugan's from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
Let you introduce yourself.
Chairman, is that what the Department of Economic Development and Planning is? Is that now, in effect, Commerce and Economic Development?
That's right.
Yeah.
How come it hasn't been changed?
Well, it has. We did it in 75.
I know that. I wonder why it hasn't been changed in the books.
It should have been the revisory statutes.
Should have got to it by now.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been called Economic Development and Planning for years.
Mr. Kelly.
This has been going on before?
There has not been a competition held in the past. Isn't that right, Jim?
That's true.
There has never been one held. The authorizing legislation was originally passed in 1960, but a competition was not held. I think the feeling was, as they were reviewing the statutes last year, nothing has been done with it. Just having a law on the books isn't accomplishing very much either. It should be off the books, or action should be taken on it. At that time, the feeling was the museums are more logical as a location for it.
Tell me this, this is a Alaska Native Arts and Crafts competition. Is one of the eligibility requirements that you have to be an Alaska Native?
No, the last section of page 3, section 160, defines Native arts and crafts means arts and crafts representative of the Native cultures of Alaska, and does not mean only arts and crafts produced by Alaska Natives. That was not in the original wording. The question that came is, you know, can you have a discriminatory state-sponsored competition? And although I don't think there was an official response on it, the feeling from the Library Department of Education was, you know, we should have that clarification so that there is not a misunderstanding on what we are awarding or rewarding or recognizing are the Alaska Native arts and crafts as a type of art form or of craft form, not as to who actually has produced it. That's certainly available for discussion. I'm
Mr. Necke.
Mr. Engen, could one of the categories also be writing?
I guess it could be, because certainly writing is an art. You're not going to find a librarian who wouldn't say that writing is not an art. It was not one of the ones that has been thought of or ever mentioned before that I know of. Jim, maybe you do. I would see no reason.
There are styles of writing which have a what you might call a definite bush taste. No, I'm serious, you know. Something that, if written in what you might call college English, wouldn't have the same impact.
That's
a writing style
true.
Which is unique to St. Lawrence Island, Kotlik on the Yukon, or up the Selawik River.
The
not artist for the fact that they get a prize because they write in this type of language, but that their story is so graphically presented in word form that had it been in American English or English English, that story would not have been perceived.
I would see no reason why it couldn't be. I guess when I'm thinking of it, I can see some difficulties coming, because the writing in one sense is not a traditional Native art form. The telling of the stories, that is, it is an oral tradition rather than a written, and translating that onto the page, I can see as a difficulty. I think it'd be a very fascinating thing to try to do, to develop it. I can see difficulties of...
The written form that I'm talking about is just the oral
taking
form.
Taking the oral and putting it onto
just,
a piece
of
print.
Putting it on paper, because the oral form of storytelling in the older generations has a very unique status. I mean, I can't tell a story and come across as well as my 106-year-old grandma. So, and it's just that these stories are taken from a verbalized form into a literary type.
Of course.
Isn't that the original, the basis behind Homer's Iliad? Isn't that
that's an oral tradition written down. Well, basically, you know, all of our Western.
Ed?
I know what I was talking about. I think that it seems to me that there is already in the museum, but there's something a while back where they record these stories. I thought there was something in the museums where they have now on record these folklores and stories of that were orally recorded. Maybe there isn't. Maybe I just thought somebody was doing that.
Oral, excuse me.
There are some in the time at the University of Alaska, quite an extensive work on recording Native culture.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that collection, the University of Alaska, holds the original tapes of a project that the Alaska Library Association ran, and we have produced in cassette format about 300 of the stories, which are now available in Nome, Bethel, Anchorage, Fairbanks, here in Juneau, and I believe Ketchikan, so that those are available as told in the native language, and if possible, with a translation, again by the original teller if possible, if not by someone else.
The only question, Mr. Chairman, that I asked was could that be a form of category? And if it can't, fine. If it can, fine, too. You know, it's just something that I was looking at these different art forms, and it wasn't included, and it was just something that I'm aware of back home, and not that I'll cry and fight if it isn't included. I won't, you know, but it's just something that I want to discuss at this table.
Mr. Chairman, and so forth in this bill, wouldn't that cover just about anything that these people, it says up here that they're consulting with representatives of arts and native organizations, they have quite a leeway of deciding currently what category would be in there. Could that be added in there?
It certainly could be if you would like to add the word writing. All I can say is if that would stimulate our catching and saving and holding the oral tradition in a form that can be passed on to future generations, we would quite frankly be all for, you know, such an inclusion. I see difficulties of doing it, but I see values to be received that are worth the attempt.
Oral and written?
I'm sorry?
Because I never thought about it, you know? You guys don't think of everything all the time, Tim. Jesus Christ.
Continuing with freewheeling debate,
it isn't.
You just indicated
it isn't there. Look, can you see it?
Well,
Mr. Miles, Chair recognizes Miles.
Dick, would you have any objection if we would put an amendment in there?
Absolutely none. I would have no objection. I would, obviously, as I say, you aren't going to find a librarian who isn't going to say that is an excellent idea, and I do think it is a good one. It was a good thing it was brought up because it is not one of the traditionally thought of art or craft forms. I would have.
Writing is certainly.
There are authors who do believe that.
There are some. What is it for? Okay.
Go ahead, Bill.
Mr. Chairman, is this a $6,000 included in the governor's budget?
No, it is not.
Let's take a 2 minute at ease.
Okay, 2 minute at ease.
I think you really want to put here oral and written.
How would we write that, Dave?
I know, I got to plug in on this, so to explain to me what you
guys
want to do.
You guys wrap the story to me.
Okay. They're saying that...
We lost some very good pieces in that one.
Oh, did you really?
We passed out
$90,000.
And we're amending that out. We need to
wasn't it offered for $300,000?
200 and... It was a little less. We could have got for... $225,000, I believe, was the actual price we had from Mary Kopinski. Well, some members from the House Finance Committee went down and looked at it, decided that we should purchase it, and it, you know, it was one day away.
So you want to include a category for stories.
One day away.
Remember? Oral and written stories.
Is that what you're contemplating, Bill, too? Oral and written stories. Okay. Categories for entries such as basketwork, woodweaving, Far East stonework, ironwork, painting. Yeah. Comma. Oral and written story forms. I mean, that's not a legal term. It's whatever.
It might.
You know, whatever
is line 27, parent 5, prizes and awards for winning entrants. I guess we're talking about, since we're taking out restricted to ribbons, cups, plaques, etc., I guess we're talking about money.
Yes. That's, we may or may not offer. Competitions, you know, are of various natures. With the Alaska Positive Show, I believe the Best in Show award was $150. Looking at the Alaska, you know, the Native Festival of Arts, which I had a form on here, I believe their Best in Show was a $250 award. That's awarded by, you know, the Anchorage Fine Arts Museum now.
But Mr. Chairman, these awards are basically donated type dollars or subsidized by some...
Very often, our Exxon may provide
like that, yeah.
Amounts of
so
money
not,
and so
it's
on.
It's not a dollar amount that comes out of the state coffers. It's basically outside dollars coming in.
However, it could be state dollars.
It could be state dollars. We would prefer that it be outside because, again, you get that additional publicity with someone else involved in the competition. That usually helps you get a broader range of of public awareness of it.
I mean, we're not opening ourselves up to $10,000 grand prizes.
Well, I can only guarantee you as long as I have anything to do with it, but I think I can guarantee you, no, you are not.
On page 3, section 4, where it's talking about, you know, where they can display this stuff, is that restrictive of public buildings with adequate security?
Well, it's restricted to buildings with adequate security. It may well be that in some of our communities, if we want to get this in, that the local bank will be the best possible space for us to display them, because that's the best public building we've got. It is not restricted to public building in our concept. It is merely selecting a location that does have the required security to protect it, and, you know, where they are willing to cooperate with us.
Chairman?
Where was security mentioned in that?
I don't believe it's mentioned in here. That's merely one of the policies that we would have as, you know, as a museum responsible for traveling exhibits. Where they are going to be exhibited is one of the things that must be satisfied before we can put any exhibit there, whether it be one from the, you know, the National Museum or one such as this, that there be adequate security. And for different types of shows, there is, you know, a different requirement for security. They may have exhibit cases that they could put them in, or, you know, in the windows, whatever. Uh-huh. It is not mentioned in here. I'm sure that would be the type of thing that we would cover by museum policy and regulation.
Okay, and public buildings mentioned? Public buildings isn't.
I don't believe it is.
So I'm sort of thinking from a selfish standpoint, it'd be nice to have some of this nice-looking stuff around the legislature. You know, the governor has some nice totemic stuff and some nice art, and the legislature looks pretty shabby. You know, I mean, from an artistic point of view.
Well, there would be no reason why these could not be placed. Our first looking would be for a public building, because
sure,
that is a place where people are quite, all people in the community are welcome to go into, so that's a very good requirement for us. I believe the Art Bank program of the State Council on the Arts is more likely to be able to supply materials for, you know, more permanent location or long-term display in public buildings.
Okay.
I certainly, you know, would like to see these as broadly viewed as possible.
What happened to the entrance after the judgment?
What happens to the entrance?
Are they sent? What happens,
yes,
to the
defense? Normally they are sent back. Now, if the person lists that they are for sale, this is the normal way of handling it, and again, that would be a matter, I think, of regulation that would be jointly established, but for instance, for the Alaska Native Festival of Arts, the entrance, if they wish to sell or put the item up for sale, they can put a price, you know, a value on it, a price that they can be sold at, in which case they would be sold, and at the end of the show, the person who has paid for it would take the art piece with them. If it is not sold, or if they do not want to sell it, then it is returned to the person who entered it. Now, in this case, we would add a further requirement, that is that it is available for traveling, because in all likelihood, once it has come, if we're going to go to four regions, we're talking about a year's, at a minimum probably, use of time of that individual artifact or piece of art that is going to travel to various sections of the state. So the person signs the agreement that it can be traveled and used that way. But eventually, when the exhibit possibilities are gone, then it would be returned to the individual who originally submitted it.
Mr. Ingen, on page 3, the last section, section 7, what's being repealed?
Sorry. Let me look here and see if I can...
On the 4 regions. Okay.
65190.
Oh, good. That's regional competitions. That's all it refers to. The entire section dealt with regional competitions, and since we are not specifying for regional competitions, that entire section was repealed, or is repealed.
Mr. Danquist?
One question on page 5, line 8, I believe it is. It says promote annual competitions. Do you want to be confined to just one competition, or I see over on the front it says continuous competitions, and there you're going to, you can accept grants for an annual competition. Will you likely want to hold more than one competition?
In all likelihood, I doubt that we would, but I'm surprised. What we have done, I think, as you can see in many cases here, is try to leave this very broad. Originally, as the law was written, it required that we consult with a specific Native organization. We've tried to broaden it, and there we should have taken annual out, frankly, because it, you know, why limit it? I don't think it practically matters, because I doubt that you could mount more than one of such competitions, you know, within a year period. But no, we wouldn't want to be limited to it. If, you know, if a large firm or something were willing to sponsor and put up funds for another one, we might be quite eager and willing.
That would be my thought. If you're going along, someone wants to finance another one, you're stuck with one annual competition.
I think we might learn to count years from different starting dates. I don't offer that as an honest solution. That was a facetious comment.
Mr. Nackack.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. If it would be okay with Mr. Engen, and I'm sure it is, I'd like to move to include on page 1, line 23, after the word painting, comma, oral and written narratives, etc., as categories of, as an additional category of entry.
Any objection? Okay, hearing no objection, the amendment's adopted. What's the, is there any further comment on the bill? What's the pleasure of the committee?
Chairman, I move that we move it out.
Okay.
Pass recommendation.
Any objection? Okay, we'll move out House Bill 80 as amended then.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm always of a hesitant to change additional things if they don't have to be. But
We've got to sign the paperwork. Since we need the paperwork on 86. And yeah, don't anybody leave because we got to talk about coffee, how to sign bills, Lapine Leaf.
No.
Oh, there you are. Okay. He was just blocking it. Just right. Just right. And then DOT.
Thanks.
So let's go over coffee. I guess the staff has put up $10 or something from the beginning to now for coffee.
Wait a minute. Let me turn the recorder off first.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, we're still assessing.
Now we can be adjourned.
Okay, and they want an input. But they won't be available till next Wednesday.
Associated who?
General contractor.
Aren't we on a schedule? It's just informational, isn't it?
Yeah. So I huddled with the bill sponsor, and it was his feeling and my feeling that it would make sense to hold the hearings Wednesday. Now.